This is KUT Weekend for the last weekend of June. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier. Here's what we got for you this week. Gay couples in Travis County line up to get married after the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down the state's ban on same-sex weddings.
We've waited a very long time for this. It's been 15 years. It just feels good.
Symbols of the Confederate States of America face new scrutiny in Austin following a deadly church shooting in South Carolina.
There are, of course, a number of people who want those statues taken down.
And Austin musicians struggle to pay for health insurance.
Myself, I do a bunch of other menial jobs just to be able to continue to practice what I love to do.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. But first, I want to ask you to subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org, and that way you never have to worry about missing an episode. If you go there, we have links to our iTunes, our Stitcher, our SoundCloud feeds, and an RSS feed as well. And if you have the time, feel free to leave us a review in the iTunes store. It really helps us out a lot. Yeah, got any questions or comments about this podcast, ask me on Twitter. I'm at KUTNathan. You can also email me, nathan@kut.org. Hundreds of people went to the Travis County Clerk's Office Friday to get their marriage licenses. Now, for a lot of people, the next step was to head to the courthouse for a 3-day waiver from a judge so they could get married right away. Texas law requires couples to wait 3 days before a wedding ceremony. As KUT's Kate McGee tells us, a lot of couples say they're tired of waiting.
Darren Upchurch and Ted Burton wore tan linen jackets and brightly colored checkered shirts to the Travis County Clerk's Office to get their marriage license. It was an emotional moment.
We've waited a very long time for this. It's been 15 years. We feel like we've been married for 15 years. It just feels good that... I can't...
It's the same as marriage, but it's finally legitimized, and so that's a great feeling.
Today, judges waived the waiting period. Couples like Burton and Upchurch could get married immediately.
I don't think we have to cool off after 15 years.
At the courthouse, a Methodist minister was on hand to offer a blessing.
That they may surely keep their marriage covenant and so grow in love and godliness together that their home may be...
And then the newlyweds left to celebrate.
We may have a margarita. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Possibly drink just a little bit.
The Travis County clerk issued more than 80 marriage licenses by mid-afternoon, compared with 17 during all of yesterday. Kate McGee, KUT News.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton put out an advisory Thursday night requesting that county clerks and justices of the peace wait for direction from the AG's office before they issue any marriage licenses. The Travis County Clerk's Office had expected it might take 24 to 48 hours to interpret the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling. But when it came down, Travis County Attorney David Escamilla said its message was clear.
The Attorney General's office has more lawyers than my office has, and we were able to review a pretty clear and concise opinion, majority opinion, very quickly. I'll add that the Attorney General, even when he makes his advice, his opinions are not binding upon counties.
Still, some counties are holding off on issuing licenses. The head of the Austin Diocese of the Roman Catholic Church was not pleased with the Supreme Court ruling. Bishop Vasquez expressed deep sadness, and he insisted that the church would continue to uphold the belief that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Regardless of the court's decision, the nature of the human person and marriage remains unchanged and unchangeable. We will remain true and faithful to the gospel, and we will continue to call people to look deeply into the beauty and understanding of our theology of marriage.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton strongly condemned the Supreme Court ruling. He issued a written statement calling the decision, quote, a radical departure from countless generations of societal law and tradition. Paxton went on to say, quote, our guiding principle should be to protect people who want to live, work, and raise their families in accordance with their religious faith, end quote. Texas Governor Greg Abbott dismissed the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling as a matter of an unelected legislature, his words, imposing their views on states. Governor Abbott issued an order Friday directing all state agencies to prioritize Texans' religious liberties. And he said that order applies to any agency decision. No matter where you stand on the Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage, there's no denying that it made history. KUT's Mose Bushell walked around the state capitol and asked people what they thought of the court's decision.
Most of them sounded a lot like Tara Long and L.J. Johnson. Long is an administrative assistant in Killeen.
It doesn't impact me at all. I think that everybody should be allowed to marry who they want to marry. Love should be who you love.
Johnson is a lawyer in Austin.
Some people are still going to be upset about it, but I don't even think those people understand that it's not going to affect their lives. Those people are not going to come into your bedroom, and they're not going to try to tell you to be gay and that kind of thing. I don't think that's how it works. I think it should be open and available to everyone.
I'm not going to tell people what they're to do or not to do in the bedroom. I mean, that's not going to be my business.
Stephen Wagner from Fort Worth opposes the ruling. For him, it's a matter of religious belief.
I have a feeling this is going to somehow affect our church within a few years. I can see our pastor or somebody being put in prison because they failed to marry a same-sex couple.
This being the state capital, I ran into a lawmaker. In 2005, retiring state rep Jim Keffer supported legislation that led to Texas' constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. He did so against the urging of his son, who's gay. The Supreme Court ruling overturns that constitutional amendment. I asked Keffer about the ruling.
Well, again, I think it's a state right, but it impacts the country, I guess.
Positively, negatively?
You know, I don't know. But that yet to be seen, I guess. But I think it's a state right, and it's a shame that that's closest to the people, state government. And I do feel that it's where it should be. So, thanks.
Finally, I spoke to Ryan and David Gifford Robinson, a married couple from Dallas. They were in Austin on business. When they heard the news, they decided to take a stroll through the Capitol grounds. This is David Gifford Robinson.
Can't see the tears. We were married in last October in Massachusetts, which is where I grew up. And to wake up this morning and hear that... You know, I don't have to go get a court order in the state of Texas to get my driver's license changed. And just that kind of BS our marriage is no more or less than anybody else's.
Moz Bouchel, KUT News.
Before the U.S. Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage this week, there was one lesbian couple that had already tied the knot legally in Austin. The Travis County clerk issued the couple a marriage license in February, based on a court order which only applied to them because one of them was deemed medically fragile due to her battle with cancer. The couple is Sarah Goodfriend and Suzanne Bryant. And Suzanne joins me now. Thanks for coming in, Suzanne.
Thank you for having me.
How did you react this morning when you first heard the news?
We were, of course, thrilled and had anticipated that the Supreme Court would have a positive decision.
Now, you were married in Travis County on February 19th, and if I'm not mistaken, you were the first same-sex couple to be wed legally in Texas.
Yes, we were. When it happened, it was really all just very serendipitous. We had hoped a year ago, when Judge Garcia was hearing the case in San Antonio, that Texas might be like other states and that his decision finding the ban against gay marriage unconstitutional would fall into place and we'd have the chance to get married. So we were all ready a year ago to get married. Of course, the decision was stayed. We couldn't get married. But then this year, we, with our amazing, brilliant attorney, Chuck Herring, saw an opportunity and decided to try. And we were just blessed to have that opportunity, be the first couple, and hopefully get Texans used to the idea that there's really nothing threatening about recognizing our love.
What was it like hearing from other same-sex couples before today, after you had wed on February 19th?
So many people were so wonderful to us in the days and weeks after we got married. There was not one negative reaction that we got personally. I know there were some things in the media, but personally, we got so many texts and cards and flowers and donations made in our name and congratulations from people we hadn't seen in 20, 30 years who found us. One person wrote to Sarah and that she had known in high school, and it made me very sad. He must live in a smaller town and be closeted because he talked about we don't have children, but we have a dog, and we did this and we that, and he wasn't even willing to use the name of his partner. And so things like that made me realize how many people are out there that really do need the opportunity to get married openly and live openly and profess their love so that they can do things like we were doing today. Sarah took a friend to the hospital so that they can go to the hospital and that they can show their love and commitment. People get married not for the rights and responsibilities, although that's part of the consequence. People get married because they're in love. And I think that there are so many people in love that look forward to this.
Does today's ruling change your lives in any material way? I mean, apart from the fact that you're celebrating it, does it actually change your legal status or affect that in any way?
Well, I think Sarah and I have believed that we were legally married in Texas since February 19th. I think this is very clearly true now, and that the case pending before the Texas Supreme Court will be moot. So in that way, we won't have an ongoing legal question hanging before us. But in terms of our lives, we're just like any other family. We get up in the morning and we have two teenage daughters that now that it's summer like to sleep late. And we're just like any other family. We go about our business and raise our children and love each other.
One of your teenage daughters is here now, Ting, good friend. You're 14, right?
Yes.
So how do you feel about today's Supreme Court ruling that legalizes same-sex marriage across the country?
I mean, I'm really happy.
You must have been happy when your moms got married.
Oh, yes. It was very nice. I mean, I think the only downside was I was missing history class, where it's kind of important where you write notes. So I was like, dang it, I'm missing history class.
But we said to Ting when she said, oh, I'll miss history class, we said, if this goes forward and we get married, you'll be making history.
You got a lot of media attention after the wedding. How was that in school with your friends and stuff?
I mean, the day after they got married, everyone kept saying, hey, we saw you on the news. It was so cool. I'm like, thank you. Yeah. It's not like, oh, judgment. It's like, that's so cool. Good for you. Kind of stuff. Yeah.
One last question for you. I just want to ask your reaction to the governor's reaction to this ruling today. He tweeted something. Marriage was defined by God. No man can redefine it. We will defend our religious liberties.
I'd like to find something in the Supreme Court opinion that I thought was really wonderful. It begins talking about the history of marriage and that the history of marriage in this country has been one of continuity and change. Changes such as the decline of arranged marriages and coverture, where a woman was lesser than a man and basically the property of a man. And so marriage in this country and through society has been redefined as the culture changes. This is nothing new for our society. And those changes have been good for the United States. And I think this change will be also.
Suzanne Bryant and Ting Goodfriend, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Nathan.
As I was wandering around downtown Friday looking for a reaction to the story, I ran into one widow who told me about her mixed emotions to the Supreme Court ruling legalizing gay marriage.
I'm Kathy Murphy. I am a born and raised Texan, proud lesbian. This is a day that I hoped would come for a long, long time. It's bittersweet because my wife, I can say that now, my wife of 32 years, we got married in 2010, but we were together for 32 years, passed away in 2012. We had gotten married in Massachusetts the end of 2010. She passed away in 2012, and so it's bittersweet for me. So I've just been walking all over the place. I just went to the courthouse, and I was probably the one sobbing the most as people signed up for licenses, and I just needed to be, you know, out. So I'm the crazy woman crying up and down Congress and 8th Street and walking into places, and I'm so hot right now. This would, of course, in Texas be so hot the day that we celebrate so much, but that's kind of what's going on with me. Part of my thing this morning, I asked a complete stranger to take a picture of me in front of the, you know, Texas State Capitol sign, and I posted it, you know, Texas kicking and screaming. It's about time, and I'm grateful to the Supreme Court for seeing it, and more than that, for the tide of people across the nation changing their opinion about this, because that's what it took. And, you know, the world isn't going to end. This is about not being second class. And if you've always been first class, you can't imagine what that feels like. But, you know, from an early age, most of us have felt like other. And, you know, we're not. I mean, the reaction this morning, you know, people broke out in front of the Supreme Court singing the national anthem was extraordinary, because that's probably how we feel. You know, today, you know, I feel I'm proud to be an American.
On the campus of the University of Texas at Austin, there's a statue of Jefferson Davis. He was president of the Confederate States during the Civil War. In the past, there have been some efforts to have that statue removed, but the shooting at a church in Charleston earlier this month by a white supremacist who said he was trying to start a race war, he killed 9 people in cold blood. Well, that has caused a nationwide backlash against many symbols of the Confederacy. There's a push in the South Carolina legislature, for example, to remove the Confederate flag there. The governor of Alabama has ordered the Confederate flag be taken down. So back at UT Austin, efforts to remove the statue of Jefferson Davis and possibly other Confederate leaders, statues of Confederate leaders, those efforts have gathered momentum this week. UT Austin President Greg Fenves formed a committee to make a recommendation on this. This group is going to be chaired by Gregory Vincent, who is UT's vice president for diversity and community engagement.
There are, of course, a number of people who want those statues taken down, and there are others who feel that this is a powerful reminder of our past. And so that's part of the deliberation that we'll engage in as part of the task force.
Vincent says the task force will make its recommendations this summer.
We feel now is the time to make that decision. We do have student leadership here, and we certainly have the ability to reach out to students through communication, through social media. So there is an opportunity for students to be heard on this issue.
This week, crews spent a lot of time removing newly painted graffiti from the statues, including graffiti on Davis's statue and on the Confederate General Robert E. Lee. The graffiti read, "Black Lives Matter." Now, meanwhile, national retailers like Walmart, Amazon, eBay, they've all said they are going to stop selling Confederate flag merchandise. But as KUT's Terrence Henry tells us here in Austin, some stores are ending sales of merchandise with the Confederate flag, and some are not.
Tactical backpacks that are MOLLE equipped, deck it out with the morale patches, which is kind of similar to a bumper sticker.
Gina Valverde is giving me a quick tour of Banana Bay Tactical, a locally owned military surplus and supply store in central Austin. The store's been here about 25 years. They used to focus on surplus military items. Under new owners, they do more business in military and tactical gear and clothing. They also sell flags.
Some of the flags we do have here, the previous owner had a pretty large inventory, a surplus of surplus.
There are flags for the U.S. Marine Corps, the state of Texas, even China. There is also for sale a Confederate flag, with the words, "The South will rise again," emblazoned across it. There are also Confederate flag bumper stickers, pins, and patches. Valverde and the store's owners say that right now, they're not planning to stop selling Confederate merchandise.
We do feel that a lot of that kind of symbolism of the flag kind of and those ideals are upon the customer and their choice of purchasing. We do have very few items that do have Confederate flags, you know, magnets, stickers. They actually aren't real huge sellers here.
A few miles down the road, another military surplus and supply store is taking a different route when it comes to selling the Confederate flag.
In lieu of what's happened recently, it's kind of driven us to rethink that, and we've removed them from our shelf.
Ed Hall owns Quonset Hut Military Surplus, just north of the UT campus. He says it's more of a store to buy historical military items, which, until today, included the Confederate flag as a Civil War item.
But it's become now such that people are propping it up again as a symbol of hatred and one-sidedness, you know, against everybody who is trying to strive for equality.
Back over at Banana Bay Tactical, the manager and owner say they could reconsider selling these Confederate items in the future. Up until last year, when they took over the store, it used to sell World War II pins and memorabilia, including Soviet and even Nazi items featuring swastikas.
And that's what kind of was the draw of the store, is having people come in, get those items that you know you couldn't get anywhere else. And unfortunately, very controversial items like that were purchased here, mainly because of their uniqueness.
When the new owners bought the store, they got rid of that. So far, they haven't heard from any customers that are offended by the Confederate flags and merchandise. They also say they haven't seen an increased demand for them either. Terrence Henry, KUT News.
We also got a fresh look at prejudice and discrimination in Texas this week with the release of a new public opinion survey by UT Austin and the Texas Tribune. KUT's Ben Philpott tells us about one surprising finding.
The overall results are not the surprising part. When asked how much discrimination they feel different groups experience, those polled put transgendered people at the top of the list. 73% said that group experiences either some or much discrimination. Muslims, gays and lesbians, and blacks round out the top groups. But pollster Jim Henson says when broken down into categories, one result stood out. Republicans, who self-identify as members of the Tea Party, said Christians and whites were the groups most discriminated against in Texas.
On one hand, it flies in the face with a lot of our kind of common perception of how discrimination works in the United States, and particularly the modern United States. But without, you know, rushing to judgment, I think it tells us a lot about the sense of being under siege that we're seeing from the conservative activist movement.
Another part of the survey asked about recently passed open carry and campus carry gun laws. There, the people showed the support that spurred on Republican lawmakers to pass both bills, although there was a slight divide among people living in different parts of the state.
The highest levels of support among rural Texans, the next highest among suburban Texans, and then the lowest level of support among urban Texans.
And Henson says that plays out in both parties, with support from rural, suburban, and urban Republicans higher than among Democrats. Ben Philpott, KUT News.
In Austin, the music industry generates almost $2 billion a year for the local economy. But some musicians say they're lucky if they leave a gig with $5 in their pocket. Fewer people are willing to pay cover charges to watch live music, but rents keep going up in Austin. And as KUT's Veronica Zaragovia tells us, a lot of musicians are foregoing health insurance. Some are worrying about how Austin is going to keep musicians here if they can't afford basic expenses.
Check, one, two, one, two, check, one.
From where I'm standing, it looks like Kalu James is living the life as a musician. The Continental Club's neon sign glows above him. The signatures of hundreds of music fans are scribbled on the walls of this historic Austin venue.
I'm sitting, watching the world go around.
But when he's not here, he's hustling to pay his bills.
Being a full-time musician means you have three other side jobs, you know?
Offstage, musicians like James are moving couches for people on the weekends.
Myself, I do a bunch of other menial jobs just to be able to continue to practice what I love to do.
James grew up in Nigeria. He says he moved to Austin as fast as he could about 8 years ago. Last year, he didn't have health insurance. This year, he got health insurance. His premium is $22 a month after the $200 tax subsidy he got through the Affordable Care Act. $22 might not seem like a lot, but when you earn roughly $15,000 a year, it can be a challenge. He got help paying his premium through a local nonprofit.
We still have to worry about counting the quarters and the pennies when we leave these venues. And yeah, health insurance and all those things to take care of yourself is certainly something that doesn't come by quite easily for us.
But the live music capital of the world is making far more than quarters and pennies from music. In 2012, the city estimated the commercial music industry pumped $1.6 billion into the local economy every year. The city suspects that number is higher now. But Austin, the 11th largest city in the U.S., has a creative class that's struggling to afford life here.
A lot of people did not understand
just how dire that situation is.
Nikki Rowling is the founder and CEO of the Titan Music Group. Her company did the research behind the Austin Music Census. It came out in early June with numbers like these. 20% of Austin musicians live below the federal poverty level. More than 50% qualify for Section 8 housing subsidies.
Most of them are living, piled a number of people to a house or an apartment in order to afford to be able to pay rent. And they're also looking for a specific type of job that allows flexibility for touring.
According to the Austin Music Census, almost 19% of all respondents have no health insurance. Rowling presented the findings at an event earlier this month. Organizers took questions from the public.
You know, I've had a cavity in my mouth that I just deal with when it comes and when it goes, you know, I mean...
Joshua Logan was one of the people in the crowd.
What would you recommend for somebody who makes more than 30,000, who wants to work in every single thing that they can to do what they love?
Well, you know? There's a couple of things I would tell you is, and I can't give you...
Renee Collins answered his question. She's the executive director of the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians, or HAM. To qualify for help through HAM, musicians who are single must earn $29,000 a year or less. They have to live in Travis County or certain surrounding areas. Those who do qualify get low-cost care that includes dental, vision, hearing, and mental health. Since it was founded 10 years ago, the Health Alliance has helped 3,500 musicians.
More than 88% of our membership earns less than $15,000 a year. We would say that probably close to 60% of our membership doesn't even qualify for the subsidies that are given through the Affordable Health Care Act.
That means HAM has to raise a lot of money to ensure that access to low-cost care to its members. Backstage at the Moody Theater, Tom Cavan has a unique perspective on the problem.
Some people feel like you just ought to work hard enough to have health insurance, but working in a safety net hospital like I do, you see people that come in that are working really hard, working sometimes two and three jobs to support their family.
Kevin is an executive at the Cedar Network of Hospitals. He spent almost 20 years treating patients. Kevin is in a band himself, the Stray Bullets. He spoke to me as his band prepared to go on stage at a battle of the bands to raise money for HAM.
Travel anywhere in the United States and you tell them you're from Austin, they almost always say Austin City Limits, you know. So this is very much the identity, and if we lost that, we'd just be another up-and-coming city with no personality.
But the music census out this month shows that personality might be at risk. Nikki Rowling of the Titan Music Group points to HAM as one lifeboat for musicians. This year, HAM partnered with the local hospital district and a health insurance provider to pay the health insurance premiums of 300 musicians who qualified for tax subsidies. That's the same program musician Kalu James qualified for.
Once again, that's HAM realizing that although Affordable Care Act is something that is the law now, most musicians probably still can't afford that.
HAM hopes to expand that program next year. Veronica Saragovia, KUT News.
A music venue in Austin's Red River District is closing permanently at the end of September. Holy Mountain General Manager James Taylor says it's because their landlord is increasing the rent from $5,500 a month to $8,000 a month, not including taxes, insurance, and maintenance.
And, you know, they're not wrong in trying to get top dollar for their properties. I mean, I think as a city, there's two questions that we're facing. One is, what sort of downtown central business district do we want? Do we want neighborhoods like Red River and Rainy Street and E6 that are vibrant and part of the cultural fabric of this city? You know, you could say that the writing is already on the wall.
Then the second question is, where do the music venues go?
Holy Mountain is not the only Red River venue fighting for survival against rising rents. The Austin Chronicle and the Austin American Statesman have reported that Red 7 is also facing a major rent increase. And just up Red River Street, the Mohawk and Cheer Up Charlie's are now facing their own set of challenges that stem from development. Dan Solomon writes about music and culture for Texas Monthly, and he's here now to talk with us about this. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So you've been writing about this on TexasMonthly.com. I saw your piece, and I'm curious what your thoughts are about the future of the Red River District. How important is it to try and preserve that cluster of music venues there?
Well, I think that's a question that Austin really needs to figure out for itself. We've built a lot of things around the idea that there is this cluster of venues on Red River, and the music community survived before Red River was a cluster of venues and things were more scattered, and it'll survive without it. But a lot of these things that we've built won't exist anymore. And, you know, the fact that South by Southwest is a place where you can have people from all over the country know where those venues are because they come in for South by Southwest and they know how easy it is to get from one to the other. And you can go see five different shows without ever crossing the street. If that goes away, South by Southwest will survive. Austin Music will survive, but it'll be changed in a way that could have repercussions and could turn some of the people who've grown to love that aspect of Austin away.
But as you point out, this has happened before. I mean, Armadillo World Headquarters, Liberty Lunch, Vulcan Gas Company, they're not around anymore as far as I can tell.
Well, there is a Vulcan Gas Company that opened downtown a
couple years ago. Right, they're reusing the name.
But yeah.
the original venue's gone.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, everybody sheds big tears when that happens. You know, there were a lot of tears shed when Emo's closed down on Red River and changed its format and moved to Riverside. And live music hasn't changed much in Austin since Emo's went down. It's changed a lot since Liberty Lunch closed. And, you know, the culture of music in the city and the population of the city is very different from how it was then. So, you know, I think that if you were to tell people, well, we can still have live music, it'll just be a lot more like it was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I don't know if that's really something that Austin and, you know, going forward would be comfortable with or should be comfortable with.
Is the disintegration of the Red River District inevitable, though? I mean, can landlords, by purchasing these properties, are taking a business risk? And why should they face any impediments to maximizing the benefit of that risk they've taken?
So I don't know why you would blame a landlord for it, but it does become a matter of, what do we value? And do we value having a vibrant live music district in Austin, or do we not necessarily care so much about that?
Well, back to James Taylor's cut that I played at the beginning of this, he raised the question, where do venues go next if Red River becomes unaffordable for live music venues?
It's a great question. I don't think that there's another place where you could organically insert, you know, six vital clubs. You've got Stubbs, Beerland, Red 7, Holy Mountain, Cheer Up Charlie's, and Mohawk, all within spitting distance of each other.
What about Riverside Drive?
Riverside is changing a lot too, though, which is really the concern. You could move venues into Riverside, but it's a real possibility, given the development that's happening there and the city's master plans for Riverside, that they would be forced out, you know, 5-10 years from now for the same reasons that clubs aren't viable downtown right now, or may not be viable downtown. So I think that ultimately, the scattered approach is what would make the most sense to me. I have a hard time imagining something different. You know, I can't really see Springdale Road becoming the live music hub or East Cameron becoming the place where there are six clubs all playing local music, original music, touring music. It just doesn't make much sense to me. And I think that you're already seeing some fracturing. You know, Hotel Vegas is filling a role that other venues used to fill. Nomad up on, I think it's on Cameron, is kind of doing the same thing where you've got these venues where bands that used to play on Red River are now playing in these other spaces. And you could see more of that. I think that that's a lot more likely. But there are also noise concerns in other neighborhoods. If you're in a residential part of town, it's very different if you want to have a venue, especially a venue like, you know, Mohawk or something like that, that does outdoor larger shows, especially 7 nights a week. I think that that would be a real challenge to do in a neighborhood that isn't built for it.
And we've certainly seen some of those concerns on East 6th Street. I guess what I find so fascinating about this is that Austin is marketed as the live music capital of the world. It's a huge draw for this city, but in many ways, the success of the Austin brand and its ability to attract capital and people is in some ways undermining that very feature of the city.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and that's really one of the kind of bitter ironies of this is that the Hyatt House is moving. That's the building that's coming in next to Cheerup Charlie's in Mohawk. They're moving into that location in part because there's a lot of tourism around South by Southwest and around live music, and that people want to be close to those specific venues, but they could also force those venues out. And, you know, there are big plans for the Red River Corridor. There are big plans, you know, there's a Riverwalk that's going to be going in on Waller Creek right next to all of these venues. And it's possible that the Hyatt House will serve those people. And the city doesn't seem like it's opposed to the idea of turning the Red River District into a higher tax base Riverwalk district for tourists. And tourists might enjoy that just as much. And, you know, maybe those spaces could be used during South by Southwest as music venues the way so many non-full-time music venues are. But at the same time, like you said, we have this issue of music culture created much of the cool that brings people to Austin, and we are really at risk of strangling our music culture.
Dan Solomon writes about music and culture for Texas Monthly. You can read his reporting on this at texasmonthly.com. Dan, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
That's KUT Weekend for the last weekend of June. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org. Tell all your friends about it and leave us a review in the iTunes store. If you have any questions or comments, email news@kut.org. Our theme music is by RAC. Thanks again for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. And then,